Welcome to the Betting Above the Rim podcast. Today's date, October 13th, episode 183 of the Betting Above the Rim podcast. Before we get started, I figure with the WNBA season ending, NBA season starting up next week, we decided to bring in some hired guns because Coach always could bring on other people to help him out. So today, currently now with Sports Illustrated and sports host of SiriusXM, longtime commentator at one point for ESPN, Robin Lundberg joined the show. Robin, thanks for coming on the Betting Above the Rim podcast.
You got it, man. No problem. You know, I can dish it. I can swish it. You know, any way you want to look at it.
Well, speaking of swishing and dishing, let's get into our leadoff topic with the WNBA as the Las Vegas Aces won the WNBA championship, sweeping the Phoenix Mercury 4-0, winning their third title in 4 seasons. When you look at it, Robin, talk to me about your thoughts on just the job that Becky Hammon did, particularly the second half of the year where they did not play well. What did you see out of Las Vegas the second half of the year besides Asia Wilson being Asia Wilson?
Well, you know, Becky Hammon, I believe, has the best winning percentage of any coach, period, in the playoffs. And, you know, she's only lost, I believe, one playoff series since becoming the Aces coach. She has the experience at the NBA level. She really was hammering home like the idea that they were a champion that had lost their way. Now, it did feel like they weren't going to be in this position. That is definitely fair. Kelsey Plum was moved in the offseason. She was a big part of that last core, and they felt like they were floundering. But it did change, and they won 17 games in a row to close the season. I mean, you mentioned Asia Wilson. That's a big part of it. But Jackie Young is another player on the team who deserves a lot of credit. I mean, she's one of the best two-way players in the entire league. They got, you know, a vet like Chelsea Gray to sort of set the tempo. And then in the playoffs, they got contributions from other places. Dana Evans really thrived for them. You know, Megan Gustafson played well for them in spots. And things sort of broke in their favor in a sense. Obviously, the Indiana Fever were not at full health. The Liberty sort of hit the skids, so they didn't have to go through them. The Minnesota Lynx, who were the best team all year, they got eliminated by the Mercury. Nafisa Collier hurt there. So some of this was about who was healthiest at the end, but credit to Hammond, Asia, and the rest of the Aces, because, you know, from that start of that win streak through the finals, it's hard to argue they weren't the best team, even if they did go to OT against the Hospital Fever, and they were close to being eliminated by the Storm in the first round, too.
Yeah, and I also think there was a couple of things I thought that Becky Hammon did really well. I thought putting Jewel Lloyd in the beginning of the second half of the year on the bench kind of allowed her to kind of thrive. I just thought that Jackie, Chelsea, Jewel all liked the ball in her hands. It just kind of took them time to get going. So by bringing Jewel off the bench for a majority of time, it kind of allowed her to kind of get into a flow, and then Becky can mix and match. Also, underrated, Nelissa Smith trade I thought was brilliant by Las Vegas, because what it did is it moved Kia Stokes to the bench, and you even saw in game number 4, DeWanna Bonner was guarding at one point, I do believe, Nelissa Smith, and they went inside to her early and often in the first quarter. So I just thought those moves were fantastic. Speaking of moves, I mean, good God, what Asia Wilson did down the stretch and in the playoffs was truly phenomenal. So now it comes into play, right? She's the only player joining Bill Russell to have 3 MVPs and 3 finals and championships in a 4-season span. Now comes the fun part. Do we put, or is she considered now, the GOAT of the WNBA? Robin, what are your thoughts?
I mean, it's hard to argue against it, right? Like, I guess that's the way I would put it. If somebody says it, I'm not going to be like, you're wrong. I mean, there are cases to be made for Diana Taurasi was voted by the fans as the GOAT. She just recently retired. Obviously, she had that long, illustrious career, plays a little bit of a different position than Asia. And then there are the pioneers of the game when you go back to Cynthia Cooper and Candace Parker and Tamika Catchings and Lisa Leslie and so on and so forth. But Asia Wilson, factoring in what she's already done, combined with what she can still do, it certainly feels reasonable to call her the GOAT. Now, that comes knowing that there is more attention around the game now than there's ever been. And there are more players on the come up than there have ever been before. So, you know, a GOAT title isn't exactly necessarily solidified for all time. But the way I would put it in my purview, it's probably between Asia and Taurasi, and recency bias would certainly say Wilson.
Well, I think because Wilson has a couple more years left, if she hangs another championship trophy up there in Las Vegas, and I think she could probably surpass Taurasi. I always think about the name that we don't talk about enough, Robin, is Maya Moore. Because Maya Moore retired. I mean, Robin, she retired before she got to her prime. So that is always the one that always sticks out to me as kind of like we look at like Sandy Koufax in baseball. If Maya Moore would have still played, I mean, she still could be playing, to be honest with you. I think she is the one that kind of is like, it's hard to judge her because of how long she was there. But I agree with you 1,000%. If we had to put up two, it's probably Asia and Taurasi. But if Asia gets another title, then I do think we may have to push the needle over to Asia Wilson. Moving on, speaking of Asia Wilson, going into next year, well, let's hope that they don't mess it up.
Yeah.
And they might. Robin, your top five players going into next year.
Well, I mean, you have to give the nod to Asia coming off what she just did. Nafisa Collier was battling with her for the MVP all year long. I just mentioned Jackie Young, one of the better two-way players in the league. Kelsey Mitchell, I think, raised her stock. She was already a bucket getter, but what she was able to do with the Fever being so injury-riddled, and particularly against Vegas, right? Like, you know, going head-to-head in Vegas, this superstar-laden team, and getting the Fever right to the brink until the wheels fell off. And then there's Caitlin Clark, who, you know, she hasn't played in a while, so it's like people forget, and because she gets talked about in this way that's different than everybody else, it allows for the narrative to be hijacked at times. But this is still somebody who, as a rookie, generated more points than any player in a single season in the history of the league, who only stands to get better as her career goes on. So, you know, I would expect Caitlin Clark, if healthy, to be fighting for that top spot immediately on returning to the floor.
And for me, three to five, I think there's just no doubt, right? Obviously, Asia and Nafisa Collier, and then Caitlin Clark is in my top five out of five. For me, I'm going to give a little bit of a pass to Breanna Stewart. Just knowing people I know around Breanna, she was banged up. And I do think Sandy Brondello kind of lost her way a little bit with that team, especially the fact that she just shot the ball so poorly from three. Both her and Sabrina Nesco. It'll be interesting to see, number one, who did Liberty bring back? But two, who is going to be the head coach? And if they do bring back Jonquel with Sabrina and Stewie, how do you play them? Because I think Stewie's more effective inside, but they play her too much outside. And then for me, Paige Beckers. I look at her and her fundamentals and how she plays and just what she brought to the table. Now, Kirk Kouklonis, some people call him Kirk Clueless, whatever, he's gone. But when you look at Paige, her fundamental game, her usage rate wasn't as high as Caitlin as a rookie, but there are other things, metrics you look at, her shooting percentages, her splits, obviously that 44-point game she had, which she was unconscious for the floor. I don't think I've ever seen that from a rookie or a veteran. But I think that leads into another topic. We kind of went over, but we got to start with this next. Coming up after the commercial break, we got to get to the NBA. But Robin and I have to have a discussion because it's starting to come out all over the place. Caitlin Clark, Paige Beckers. You got to have one. You can't have both, but you're definitely not taking either. So after the commercial break, we'll talk about Paige versus Caitlin. And then we'll get into the NBA topics, LeBron's injury, Keegan Murray's injury, and what's going on with Giannis. We'll be back after this commercial break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Betting Above the Rim podcast, episode 183. And we're joined by Robin Lundberg from Sports Illustrated and sports host on SiriusXM. Robin, it's time. It's time that it's a topic that now just shows how great this WNBA game is, because we could basically punt on part of the NBA because we haven't finished with the WNBA, and it's the debate. Caitlin Clark, Paige Bueckers. And I know people are going to look at Caitlin like, I want to kind of almost, I don't want to say punt this past year for Caitlin, but I don't think we could use that as a metric because of the fact that she was hurt, right? And she was hurt pretty much all year. So lining up rookie year to rookie year, you're a GM. You're tasked with, you can have one of these two to build a franchise off based off their first year, the rookie year. Paige or Caitlin? Who do you take and why?
I take Caitlin. You know, I don't really think too hard about it. It reminds me of LeBron versus like Melo or Kevin Durant, where those debates would come up a lot and people would make the argument for a Melo or a KD because they had more of a bag or like a smoother all-around game. But, you know, the Hulk's all-around game isn't always so smooth, but it's effective when he just smashes. That's a good tactic. And for me, what Caitlin does that's different from everybody else, really, it's twofold. She extends the defense out so far. You know, it's not even about the shooting so much as what she's able to do playmaking as well. So she can either pull from 35 feet or dice you up that way, and she gets to the cup and finishes. So I think her ability from deep and her ability at the rim and her ability to playmake in between is a differentiator, while Paige is really effective in the mid-range and has a super smooth midi and gets to her spots really, really well. I don't think it's quite as explosive as what Caitlin's able to do, also in transition, because Caitlin's really good at getting the ball, rebounding, and getting out and going. So, I mean, that takes nothing away from Paige Bueckers, who's absolutely tremendous. And this is part of a transformative era, I think, for the WNBA in a sense where they're moving toward more guards when it's been very post and big heavy in the past. But there's a reason why Caitlin Clark set all those records at college and then went into the WNBA and set all those records immediately. I really do think she's just a different level talent than everybody else.
And I take the other side as a coach. And you know, think about just the fact of, first things first, no one really scores a ton at UConn because Geno's kind of like, I guess you say Dean Smith, right? They always score more when they get to the next level. So when you look at me and as a coach, I'm taking Paige because of, number one, her shooting splits were just a little bit higher. I think about a 47.7% from the field as a rookie. Obviously, Caitlin does the more of the dynamic plays, right? The long threes, the logo threes, the sexy passes. But in regards to efficiency, based off of a lower usage rate, her numbers are a little bit higher. Now, the crazy thing about it is honestly, folks, it's so close to me. I think the reason why I go with Paige is probably her ability a little bit bigger, really good defensively, 1.6 steals per game this past year, but it's so close. And I think the thing what's great about it is like I said, it's the debate that Robin can have. And Robin can say, Caitlin, I can say Paige, and neither one of us could be wrong because those two are so dynamic. And I feel like the WNBA is in such great hands. And I will say this, and I'll go throw it back to Robin real quick. You wait, folks, because there's another kid coming in 2 years, and that's Juju Watkins. And she could be the best out of all of them with her being at about 6'4". What do you think, Robin?
Well, I mean, I would push back a little bit because Caitlin's true shooting percentage, I believe, was higher than Paige. That's one of my gripes with Paige is she doesn't shoot enough threes. I actually think she should pull a little bit more often from beyond the arc. But from the rivalry standpoint, it's interesting because so much of it was framed like Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese, Caitlin, because you go back to college and obviously everybody saw this. And then people threw the other dynamics, black, white, whatever, all that into the mix, where Paige is actually a bit more of a natural rival for Caitlin, given they met head-to-head in college also in the Final Four, and they play similar positions. So you could actually see their battles going back and forth in that sense. And I think, you know, Paige has the higher ceiling all around. More though, Angel, not to take away from what Angel does and the stuff she does well, but I think Paige's ceiling probably a little bit higher. But yeah, tremendous players. But I still think the stuff that Caitlin does that other people can't do, that like wow factor, yeah, that doesn't count in the box score necessarily, but we have seen it translate into the results, both for her individually and in team success.
Hey, you know what? It may not count in the box score, but you know what it counts? In media rights. You know where it
the
counts?
Box office.
In ticket score. It counts at the box office. That's yeah. Where it counts. Really quick, let's jump to a couple of NBA topics really quick. Number one, LeBron James. He's out. He's going out with a sciatica. I mean, I'm 49. And maybe we need to start to get worried a little bit, but LeBron is going to miss the start of the NBA season. Concern about LeBron, the Lakers, and really, is this now have to be Luka's team and not LeBron's team?
Well, I mean, it says it all about LeBron, where he's judged by his own standard, right? What is this, his 23rd season? What is he, 40 years old? I mean, like, okay, he's not the guy all the time anymore, and he might be a little banged up. What's wild to me is that people are like, oh, he's faking an injury. What are you talking about? The guy's played more minutes to games, whatever, than anybody, right? So I think they made the trade for Luka to eventually transition into Luka's team. We are getting towards the end of LeBron's tenure in the NBA, as hard as that is to believe. But at the same time, you know, given where he is and given his experience, missing the beginning of the season isn't a big deal if he's going to get right. You'd much rather have him healthy down the stretch.
Well, listen, they want him down the stretch of the season, and if this is the last hurrah, we better enjoy it, because he will go down as maybe not my GOAT, but the backup GOAT to Jordan. But we'll talk about that another time. Coming up after the commercial break, we'll preview the Eastern Conference, but we have to come back to Giannis, because there's news about Giannis. Giannis happy? Giannis not happy? Giannis gets another brother? Is he going to stay? Is he going to go? And why I think Doc Rivers is still the most overrated coach in the NBA. We'll be back to end the Betting About the Response podcast with Robin Lundberg after this commercial break. Welcome back to the Betting Above the Rim podcast, episode 183. Let's head to the NBA with our Eastern Conference preview with Robin Lundberg. Right now, Cleveland Cavaliers are plus 210, Knicks are plus 380, Orlando 6-1, Atlanta 8.5-1, Boston 11-1, Detroit 12-1, 13-1 for the Sixers, 20-1 for Milwaukee, 35-1 for Indiana, and 45-1 for Miami. Lead off with this. Robin, who is your pick to win the Eastern Conference, and why?
I'm going with the Orlando Magic. You know, I feel like every year, there's that one team that sort of takes that leap from before, and the Magic look most poised in what should be a wide open East. Obviously, we don't know when Jason Tatum will be back. Tyrese Halliburton out for the Pacers. And the Magic, they added to their core. You know, they get Desmond Bane. They've got Wagner, who's a hell of a player. They've got Banchero, who's a hell of a player. I just like that core group and the depth that they have around them. And it seems like the situation is unfolding for them to make that kind of run. So that's the team I'm putting a pin in and predicting to come out of the East.
And they did address their shooting deficiencies with getting Desmond Bane. And I think that's a good look. I think Orlando is a top four team, actually third best team in the East. But for me, it's the Knicks. You know why? It better be the Knicks. After getting this close and firing Tibbs, now trying to strengthen their bench with Clarkson, with Yabusele, right? With possibly Brogdon. They've strengthened their bench. But to me, the biggest one to look at for the Knicks, honestly, folks, is Mitchell Robinson. If he is healthy and you slide Cat to the four and you go big, they're going to be a problem. Let's head to the surprise team. Robin, who is your surprise team in the East this year?
I'm going with the Atlanta Hawks. I like the addition of Alexander Walker. Kristaps Porzingis, you know, health is always an issue with him, but talent really isn't. And Trae Young, sometimes he gets a little bit discredit. Not a defensive stalwart. I think that's fair, but probably has had a better career than he gets credit for. So I think from a surprise standpoint, which means doing better than people expected, to me, it's the Atlanta Hawks, given I think they improved their roster quite a bit.
And they should be a top six pick team in the East. Let's be honest, folks. You look at the fact that they've had Lloyd Pierce. They've had Nate McMillan. They've had Quinn Snyder. They've had Clint Capella. They've had DeJounte Murray. They had John Collins. They had DeAndre Hunter. The only person that hasn't moved is Trey. If this team does not make the top six, you got to start looking around and saying, there's only one guy that hasn't been moved. Maybe that person that gets moved is Trae Young. But I do expect them to be top six. And I agree with Robin, they are a surprise team. My surprise team is Philadelphia. Why? Last year, we were talking about them being the biggest threat to Boston. Now, everybody's back. Now, health is going to be a concern. But Philadelphia, to me, if they stay healthy, and this is Joel Embiid, this is McCain who's hurt, this is Maxey, this is Paul George, this is all of them. If they're healthy, Philadelphia could be a serious problem because when he's the healthiest, Joel Embiid, along with Giannis, are the two best players in the Eastern Conference. Robin, quickly, who is going to be the team or teams you think that may disappoint?
I go with the Knicks and the Cavs just because everybody in those respective fan bases is expecting everything. So if either of those teams doesn't do that, then it's disappointment. And I think for the Cavs specifically, I still question their in-between. You know, their guards are good and their bigs are good. Are their wings good enough? And I don't know if that's been addressed. And then for the Knicks, my biggest question would be, in the past, Tom Thibodeau has a penchant for running a team into the ground, like getting every last bit, every last squeeze out of the orange, if you will. So that's not the case with the Knicks. We'll see. I mean, maybe that's why they thought they needed a fresh perspective, because he wasn't using the bench enough, all those things. But that has been his track record, and I thought that they did about as well as could be expected. The fact that it somehow got framed through disappointment is almost retroactive in a sense.
And for me, it's Milwaukee. I think there's problems. And you can give me 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 12 onto the coupons. It ain't going to solve the fact that their guard play isn't good. I'm not banking on Miles Turner. And here's the thing. At the end of the day, does Giannis want to come to the Knicks? I don't know. But at the end of the day, they got Doc Rivers. That's their biggest issue. This has been your Betting Above the Rim podcast. Thank you for Robin Lundberg for stopping by. For all things sports gambling, download that Sports Grid app. For my producer, Matty George, and of course, Robin Lundberg, for stopping in. This is Coach Young. Thanks for listening. Remember, it's smarter to be on Sports Grid. Good night.